It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Carl Nathy is with us today. He's been a radio and television sports reporter and anchor and was with UK Public Relations for 32 years, doing mostly radio and TV work before retiring earlier this year. He's best known, of course, to UK sports fans as the public address announcer for University of Kentucky football. He's in his 25th year as the voice of Kroger Field, formerly Commonwealth Stadium. And he is with us today. Welcome, Carl. Good to have you with us.
Well, Keith, it's good that I'm still working, but retired from office duty. But a pleasure to be here with you as always.
We're recording on October 22nd today, and the current Wildcats are 6-1. There's a lot of excitement around the football program. I would imagine the current season has provided some highlights for you.
It really has. It's exciting to see what Coach Stoops and his assistant coaches have brought. This is the ninth year Coach Stoops. He's kept most of his staff intact, although he's not afraid to make some necessary changes, and also you lose coaches to other schools and so forth. But this year's been exciting, seeing some of the new offense with Liam Cohen and so forth, and Brad White coordinating the defense. He continues in that role for the last several years. And both sides of the ball have shown some new wrinkles. There is tough competition every week in the Southeastern Conference, but to get off to that 4-0 conference start, 6-0 overall before the recent game at Georgia, which just kind of ran into the buzzsaw there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did. But there's the atmosphere of the Georgia game and LSU game, rather, and the Florida game, just fantastic. And, of course, the fans are an important part of what you do. They respond to what you do, and in particular, your first down Kentucky call that has become so well-known. And I'm sitting in the stands, and I hear probably 55,000 of the 60,000 doing it right along with you when you make that call. That's I know you have many other things on your mind at that point, but an important part of it to know that the fans are enjoying it and interacting back with you.
Well, it's very nice. I tell you, to be honest with you, years ago when we brought that first down Kentucky back, because Doug Bruce had done it for a couple of years during his tenure as the PA announcer before I got the job in 1997. And there used to be people that I know in town and so forth, and they say, "Why are we celebrating first downs? Seems like, you know, we celebrate first downs. We celebrate touchdowns even more. But the point is, it was something that I was asked to do back in the late 90s to kind of help stir up the excitement. And now seems like not only are our fans behind it for the most part, and I respect those that may not, that wish we didn't do the first down Kentucky, but most of them do seem to be on board, and it's kind of a rallying cry for the team. And I might say, and I'm not claiming to be any kind of a trailblazer, but if somebody takes the time to listen to a radio broadcast or a telecast of a football game, college or pro, and if you hear the PA announcer in the back, most of the time nowadays it is a different style. I grew up as a great admirer of the late, great Bob Shepard, the public address voice of Yankee Stadium from 1951 through 2007, almost made it to his 100th birthday before he died in, I want to say, 2010, 2011. But he was straightforward, had that voice that, as people would call it, the voice of God, that was like you'd hear in a quiet place in a church or something. But that style, and it was his own thing, and I sought out in my start to do that. But times change. What people expect of a public address announcer changes, and anyway, I'm just glad people are on board. That was a longer answer than I meant to give you, but that's the story.
Well, you know, public address announcing is sort of a pretty close to a unique niche in that you are describing after the fact the action. You're certainly giving the situation, the details of the game that the fans really want to hear. So you have to be right on top of it, and it's almost as much so as the play-by-play announcer. You've got to respond pretty quickly and bring people up to date. That's what they expect to hear.
Indeed, and I want to give credit to my teammates who have been alongside all 25 years. Donnie Atkins, my main spotter, and Mike Fannin, who keeps track of the down and distance and the yards gained and how many yards to go and that sort of thing. And you're processing a lot of information in a short time. And also, Mike is helping the scoreboard operator, Jay Davis, who's been with us now the last couple of years. And we've had some different people in that role, going back to Bobby Flynn, the great Bobby Flynn, who say hello to Bobby and his wife if they're out there listening to this. But wonderful people. And anyway, it has been a team effort. I guess I get most of the you get the good, and you get the bad. You know that if you're whether you're on the air and radio or television. But there's a lot of people behind the scenes. Also, Greg Herbert kind of runs the booth up there from UK Athletics Marketing, and he and his folks, they do a great job. So it really is a lot of team effort. We've got audio people up there because from the booth that we're in, they're also running a lot of the stuff that you see up on the big boards, the scoreboards and other things, and promotional messages and so forth like that.
Mm-hmm. And there is a lot to it, and we'll get into a little bit of that. But I wanted to ask you about some football highlights over the last 25 years. You're concentrating on every play, of course, but there are big plays that occur, big highlights in games, anything that stands out to you among that across that time.
Well, I'm happy to say that you mentioned earlier this year the Florida game and then the LSU game. And in back-to-back weeks, I want to say that our crowd at Kroger Field, the Kentucky fans, were in those games from before the kickoff until the final whistle, in a more sustained fashion than perhaps I've ever seen, especially in back-to-back games. We've had games where people are really into it, but there's usually a little ebb and flow. The noise that they made, Florida with 8 false start penalties, mm-hmm. and a lot of it was due to the crowd involvement. That sort of thing was tremendous. In terms of highlight games, I always hearken back to 97. The third game I ever did was against Alabama, and we beat them for the first time in 75 years. That was a great moment. Then you go to 2007, tremendous victories when Coach Brooks was there, when we beat Louisville at home, the Stevie Johnson play, and then we beat LSU in that multi-overtime game, I think it was 43-37, when LSU was number one and end up winning the national championship that year. But we were one of their smears on their record, if you will, because we knocked them off, and that was a great moment. And we've had other ones, too numerous to name, several significant victories under Coach Stoops. And you know, one thing I got a kick out of too recently was Bill Ransdell, who was one of the first people I covered when I came to Channel 18 back in the late 1985. So I saw him in his 1986 season and got to know Bill a little bit through the years. And he's so happy that he's not the first quarterback or he was the last quarterback to do such and such. There were about 5 milestones that over the last couple of years, now he doesn't have to take that phone call from, say, Keith Elkins doing a podcast. Hey, Bill, I want to talk to you because you're the last quarterback that ever did this. I'm not putting it all on you, but I'm just saying that sort of thing with sports writers and sportscasters. And now he's a proud alum, one of the great quarterbacks in UK history, UK Athletics Hall of Famer Bill Ransdell, and a wonderful guy, and his wife Deirdre, good people, just been a big part of UK, and I know he's absolutely thrilled to see the success of the football team.
Yeah, I think fans sometimes might have the idea that that's sort of a way of maybe hanging on to your fame or something, but most of those guys that are associated with that, and Bill Ransdell in particular, but really all of them who have been a part of the last victory over a certain team that has then compiled a long streak against Kentucky, they are more than happy to get rid of that, and that was a great milestone for Bill, I know, and he is happy to shed that burden now and just enjoy the Wildcats as a fan and a prominent alum. You, as a PA announcer, of course, we know you about for First Down Kentucky and keeping us up to date on the game situations. But the public address announcer has some other duties as well. And among them, unfortunately, if there's an emergency at the stadium, you are the first contact with the 60,000 or so fans that are there. Now, again, you have support and you have people who have to approve things, but you're the one whose voice will be heard in case there's some kind of an emergency at the stadium. Tell me about, if you can, the plans in place and what your duties are and who you respond to at that point.
Well, I must say at University of Kentucky, they do a fantastic job. There are weekly meetings before the season and before every home game where everything is covered from A to Z. And one of those is kind of the operations and logistics, and the other is the police and security. They're back-to-back meetings that are held every week. And like I said, everything from basically A to Z is covered. And we are prepared to make the proper announcements if and when there is an emergency situation. Thankfully, most of our so-called emergencies so far have been A, lightning and weather. We have had to ask people to evacuate from the stands. That hasn't happened in a number of years, but I know there were a couple of home games, maybe a decade or more ago, where we had that kind of a situation. And then we've had the cases when people have rushed the field out of the euphoria, most recently against Florida this year in this 2021 season. And you have to, basically, the way we approach that is, okay, the fans are out there, and yes, the university is going to get fined substantially by the Southeastern Conference, but they're out there, and then the main thing you want to do is make sure they stay as orderly as possible and then exit the field at a time after not too much time of celebrating and do that in an orderly fashion. And as far as I know, there were no injuries of note like in this past celebration. But yes, we are an important conduit, and you're always prepared for the worst and hoping for the best.
We'll come back to your PA duties in a bit, but let's go back to how you developed your interest in sports growing up. You mentioned visits to Yankee Stadium. I know that was an important part of it, but how did your interest in sports get stimulated when you were a young man?
Well, it's an easy answer. Rick Hall, whose father was Herman Hall, who was a former minor league baseball pitcher, and his wife Ruth, and Rick was 5, I was 4 and a half. Rick's younger brother Doug was 3. When they moved in next door, Mr. Hall loved the game of baseball. He taught the game of baseball to us. My dad was not a real big sports guy, but Mr. Hall more than made up for it. He would take us out to a ball field and pitch batting practice to us and throw the ball around, teach us how to field, taught us the game of baseball. Later, basically, myself, Rick, and Doug became a great athlete as well, and we played football, basketball, baseball, you name it. If it had ball in it, we played it. It wasn't so much track and field, but the major sports, if you will. I even played a little bit of ice hockey on a pond near where I grew up in Pleasantville, New York, which is about an hour north of Midtown Manhattan, New York City. But Mr. Hall and the Hall family is really how I got that interest in sports. Then I had my late mother was basically a saint. My dad was not a big fan of going into New York City. Once in a while, he would go and take my mom maybe to once a year to the theater or something like that. But he wasn't a big sports goer. So my mother, I can remember November 4th, 1962, Yankee Stadium, my first NFL football game. A neighbor, Mr. Augett, who worked in New York City, for my 10th birthday, got us 2 tickets to the Giants football game. We sat out in the stadium, and I swear, walking into the stadium, I saw father and son, I saw father, mother, and son, but I think we were the only mother and son walking into the football game. I'll never forget it. Y.A. Tittle was playing. Sonny Randall, I think, caught 17 passes for the Cardinals, which at that time I think was an individual NFL game record, but the Giants pulled it out 31-28. But it was really what I was surrounded by. And then I with the Halls, I get that interest in sports. I think I've told this story to you more than once, but when I got to be about 14 or 15, even though I loved sports, I was like one of those, I was probably one of the better athletes in town when I was 9, 10, 11. And all of a sudden, all these guys started growing up, and they were bigger and stronger and faster, and I was kind of still a small guy. And so I get to about age 14, I realize, if I'm going to stay involved with sports, which by that time was just part of me, I'm either going to have to write about it or talk about it. And I'm one of those guys that when I went to college, I knew I'm either going to study journalism or broadcasting or a combination. And at the University of Maryland, College Park, studied broadcast journalism. And the rest, as they say, I don't know if it's history, but you have a similar. You kind of knew what you wanted to do, right?
Sure, yeah. If the bug bites for this business, then
you're right.
It's pretty much lifelong.
It's there. I didn't have to worry about, what am I going to major in or whatever. I said, I got to find something that's got something with broadcasting and something with journalism so I can get prepared to do what I want to do.
Well, we mentioned your trips to Yankee Stadium. Of course, when you couldn't go to Yankee Stadium, you'd follow the Yankees as we did then, followed our favorite teams on radio, and influential announcers would certainly have Mel Allen right at the top of your list.
I still get you mentioning his name. I know it sounds corny, but I thinking about him, I still get goosebumps. To me, my favorite announcer of all time is Mel Allen. And a lot of people that might be younger, a little younger than us, remember Mel Allen from This Week in Baseball. And he did great work on This Week in Baseball, which was a weekly kind of highlight show and recap. And he did the voiceovers for that. But when he was in his prime, he was the he's the person that of our generation people remember as the voice of the Yankees. I know there's lots of people that have some roots in New York that are living in Kentucky now or living in central Kentucky and wherever they may be hearing this around around the state or beyond, since it's a podcast and it's going, you can pick it up just about anywhere on the WUKY podcast. But the fact is, he had such a wonderful voice. He had such a wonderful enthusiasm. And I just fell in love with him. And then he also worked with Red Barber, who many people admire. And then Phil Rizzuto, who was an ex-Yankee, who we've talked about him. He was a unique individual, fun to listen to. Always felt like if Phil had worked as hard as some of the, say, trained broadcasters, that he might have been he had his own niche in Yankee lore. He was so beloved by the fans. But technically, I suppose, there was things that he wasn't a truly trained announcer, but wonderful. And, you know, it gets in your blood. Like you said, you listen to these people, you see them on radio and television, you say, gosh, that looks like I'd like to do that someday. Of course, it's kind of a narrow. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a kid, oh, sure, I could be the voice of the Yankees one day. Or in your case, I could be the voice of the St. Louis Cardinals one day. And you realize there's only maybe a couple, three people that have those jobs. And guess what? Once they get them, they don't intend to leave.
They tend to keep them. And all you have to do is just look at the standings and count up the number of teams. And then that times maybe two is the number of jobs. And, of course, a lot of those are filled by, understandably, by former players. And so those opportunities are limited. But that doesn't slow you down when you're a kid, does it?
Nope. And the other thing about sports is you think of, wow, so-and-so is Dodger Stadium, or so-and-so is in San Francisco or St. Louis or Chicago. And it's like, well, if you're thinking just of one person, seems like a great life. But then as life happens, you meet somebody, you fall in love, you have a family, there's other considerations. And all that travel and all that isn't necessarily appealing. I think things have a way of working out the way they're supposed to if you keep the faith and hang in there, it works out. And that's kind of what happened for me. I started out trying to do that sports career, and I did that in radio and television for about 15 years. And then our last assignment in that category was at LEX 18 here in Lexington. I enjoyed being a sportscaster there for 4 years on TV. But it was time to kind of settle into something that was a little more family-friendly. And University of Kentucky Public Relations, in fact, ironically, I think it's okay to mention, you had nothing to do with helping me get the job, really, but you had got it selected to be the director of public relations for Transylvania University in 1989, and your slot, which had a lot of radio TV work within public relations at UK, came open, and I put my name in the hopper, and then I ended up being there 32 years until just recently retiring from office work.
Yeah, and we've talked about the satisfaction you gain from being able to continue in radio and television work. You're doing the broadcasting work, but as you say, the job is certainly more family-friendly than the baseball lifestyle, for instance, would be if you're going to do that long-term. And not that the baseball broadcasters, many of them haven't figured that out. They have a good family life. I don't know how they do that, but many of them do. But still, for a more conventional lifestyle, yet at the same time staying with your core interest, it's a pretty good situation.
Yes, and, you know, working at UK in public relations, yeah, there was nights and weekends and so forth, and sometimes you're on call for one thing or another, but compared to broadcasting, and the other thing is, and that's one of the things about PA announcing as opposed to, say, broadcasting on radio or television, although if you are an announcer for the team, whether it's one of the teams in the Southeastern Conference or whatever, you get to be a fan, but as a public address announcer, I think it's pretty easy to be a fan. I always try to be enthusiastic for the home team and respectful of the visiting team. I never want to do anything that would insult the visiting team. But you get to feel like you're a part of the action. One of the things I felt when I was in television sports, You're getting highlights, but you're there at the game, and half of your mind is on the game itself. And say if it's a baseball game, it's in the fifth inning. Well, is this game going to get over? I got to get the highlights. What's going to happen? Or football game, you're in the third quarter. Okay, after this, we're going to cut up the highlights. We're going to do this live shot. We're going to do this. It's your mind is not, you know, people think, oh, gosh, what a life. You're there at the game. But while they're enjoying it, maybe tailgating before, and enjoying the game and just being a fan and not in a rush to get anything done afterwards, I'm not feeling sorry for us or the people that are doing it now, but it's there's some pressure there. You got to do the job.
Yeah, it's not always what it seems. I remember shortly after moving to UK and working more conventional hours, I had an opportunity to go to a UK basketball game. I remember sitting down and thinking, hey, I can see the end of the game tonight. I can stay till the end of the game, which I rarely got to do in a sports reporter position because you got to take off. I mean, the 11 o'clock news starts at 11 o'clock.
That's right.
Unless there's some sort of programming delay, it's right on the mark at 11 o'clock, and you got to be ready to meet that deadline. So, again, that's not asking for any sympathy. It is nice to be able to cover sports and be close to it if you're a sports fan, but it does have those obligations to go with it as well. You mentioned the University of Maryland where you got your education. What went into your decision to go from your hometown in New York to the University of Maryland?
Well, make a long story short, I'm the youngest of four, two older brothers, an older sister, and they all went to schools within the State University of New York system, so that the tuition back then, which compared to now was, people wouldn't believe how little it was. It seemed like a lot back then, but in-state schools, which is still pretty much the case, if you were in-state in New York State, just like if you're in-state in Kentucky and go to a Kentucky public university, you're going to get a break on the tuition. Well, that was the case. Well, I came along and my parents at the time said, well, if you want to go out of state, we'll support you. Anyway, I ended up going to an out-of-state school. One of the things I wanted to find in a university, if I could, was a place that had a big-time sports program. Because my hope was that, and it kind of worked out that way, that eventually I got to work on the campus radio station. And even though we couldn't do the games live, by the time I was a senior, I was doing play-by-play and color for University of Maryland football and basketball. Now, the only difference was we weren't getting – one thing, we didn't get paid, but that was okay. We're getting the experience. But also, it was a carrier current radio station, and our games were broadcast delayed on tape. We used to record them on reel-to-reel tape recorders. Young people haven't even heard of what reel-to-reel tape recorders are, but actually, they were a real thing. And we had the games. And so, like, for, say, football games – myself and Tom Hammersky was my partner, and we'd do one half of play-by-play and one half of color so we'd get the experience. Then we'd go do post-game interviews, put the whole thing together, and guess who listened on Sunday morning? The football players. Mm-hmm. We aired it back from 9 to noon, and we at least had that much of a listening audience, although carrier current meant that basically unless it was going to the buildings that were hooked up, that's where the station went. It was not over the airwaves, so to speak. It was in the thing. But, you know, you took it the same, just like you've always done in your career and I've always tried to do. When you're broadcasting, you don't worry, at least I never have, you don't worry if there's one person listening or watching or 100,000 listening or watching. You do the best job you can. That, mm-hmm. You bring the best you can to it, and then you don't have to worry about it. Many people say, well, gosh, does that get intimidating? You know, there's thousands of people that might be hearing or no. I'll tell you what's intimidating more so is for most people, one of the main fears is public speaking. Believe it or not, I used to be shy. It's hard to believe, but I used to be shy and I had some trepidation when I'd go in front of an audience. But through the years, I gained experience, but it's different. We're sitting talking into microphones here. I'm looking at a friendly face across the studio in you, and it's different when you're doing a speech, and people want to be they want to learn something, they want to be entertained, and you're up there and you're not doing a good job, and you're not hearing. It's like the difference between an actor on Broadway. You find out right away is the comedy if it's supposed to be a musical comedy. Are the people laughing? Are they singing along? or are they just sitting there twiddling their thumbs? Mm-hmm. You get that immediate feedback. You get the audience reaction. An actor in Hollywood, gosh, that's the opposite. You get to do it multiple takes. You don't have to get it right the first time, but you really don't know how it's going to play till it all gets put together.
Right.
It's but broadcasting, if you just do your job and keep in mind that people are hearing it one person at a time, hearing and watching one person at a time, if you keep that in mind, you're going to do fine.
You have in your public relations capacity, and a lot of people are, of course, very familiar with your voice through the football work, but in the weekdays and the real life in between football Saturdays, you worked with UK presidents, a lot of major UK events over the years, whether it was emceeing or preparing information for the media in advance of those events. Tell me about some of those duties, some of those events that you took part in, and perhaps the presidents that you had association with, because these are events that where the university is putting on a public face, and it's a very important part of what they do.
Well, I was very fortunate. A person that we both know, and he's still living, he and his wife, Barbara, retired over in Louisville, Kentucky. Bernie Vonderheide is 90 years old. He's the guy that hired me. And Bernie, right away, and he had hired you before that, but Bernie gave me the chance to utilize the talents that I'd learned in my 15 years in professional broadcasting and radio and television and apply that within the university. And one of the things he recognized is that I seemed to have a knack, even though I spoke of used to be shy and some trepidation. By that point, I'd had to do enough public speaking and getting up in front of people. And I'd joined a group called Toastmasters, mm-hmm. which was about learning how to be a better public speaker, and I won't go all into that, but I owe a lot to Toastmasters. I was a part of that for 8 years, and I learned a lot about the proper way to introduce somebody, how to conduct yourself at the lectern or the podium, and it became kind of a natural thing, and Bernie called on me. Rather than him doing it himself, he'd call on me to, say, introduce the president of the University of Kentucky. So I went back to the time of Dr. Rozelle. I was hired, started at UK September 25th, 1989. And sadly, Dr. Rozelle, who was a very, I think, influential president in his 2.5 years at UK, the best way to put it, a lot of political capital, for lack of a better term, was spent dealing with the NCAA investigation of the basketball team at that time. And he got an offer to go to the University of Delaware and to see, to talk about how capable he was. He ended up being there about 16 or 17 years. He's like a legendary president at the University of Delaware, mm-hmm. now retired, but much beloved in that state. And so anyway, it's somewhat controversial with all the stuff going on with basketball. Dr. Charles Wethington became interim president, and then later, that within the first year, was named as the as the permanent president, and did, I think, a wonderful job for 11 and a half years in that role, almost 12 years. Then he retired, and we got President Todd, Lee Todd, who was very much a visionary and entrepreneur, brought a lot of business acumen to the table, did a lot of new things at UK, maybe raised, if you will, the best way to put it, raised the sights of what we could become, and worked hard to get that. And now we have Dr. Eli Capilouto, who has kind of combined, I think, the best of all these presidents, Rozelle, Wethington, and Todd, into one person who just is an indefatigable champion for the University of Kentucky and has done so many breakthrough things at the university and a great leader. And I've had the privilege, and that's what it's been, a privilege to get to know all of those individuals, to many times introduce them, get to interview them for UK at the Half radio piece that I did. And even though my bosses were Bernie Vonderheide and later had some others, and then Jay Blanton most recently, and worked closely with Kathy Johnson, who just retired from UK Public Relations, the fact is that I was given in my job being a moderator or an MC and then doing radio work and television, that you have more access to these individuals, and you get to admire the challenges they overcome, because the job of university president, there's no way you're going to please everybody. Mm-hmm. You have to make decisions, and some of them are tough decisions, but you've got to make them, and you've got to make them work. You got to do your homework, But you got to bring a strong energy and a strong resolve to the job, and yet somehow realize that not everybody's going to love you, but you're doing it for the betterment, and people are going to appreciate the things you did as president down the road. And I'd say in all the cases, Roselle, Wethington, Todd, and I think that's going to happen with Capilouto, people are going to look back and say, wow, each of these men accomplished a lot for the University of Kentucky.
As you officiated at some of these events, and these were some momentous events for the university, whether it's fundraising or new facility opening, things like that, when the media would be present, a lot of those things, a lot of planning goes into them, but then sometimes you have to call an audible, let's say, before things get started. Can you recall an instance where maybe the audience never knew that things were hanging on the edge of the cliff before the event, but they were, in fact, and you weren't sure exactly what was going to take place or how you were going to get past it? Anything come to mind on that?
You know, the best thing I can think of is something that happened more than once, but it was actually a lesson in be prepared. I kept this in mind. Thankfully, when my daughter got married earlier this year, it was a small wedding because of the COVID things, but and the day was nice. But what you learned with public relations events: have a rain plan, have a weather plan. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, we're going to have this outside. Well, it's kind of like when you're walking across campus and it's cloudy out and you have an umbrella there in the corner of your office, say, I don't think I need. Oh, yes, you do. You take the umbrella. 9 times out of 10, you bring the umbrella, it just stays cloudy, or the sun comes out, it doesn't rain. You don't take the umbrella, I go over to your office across campus, meet with you for an hour, and walk back to my office, and it's pouring, mm-hmm. and I'm drenched. So kind of what I learned, it's not exactly what you're asking, but you could plan, and we'd usually have to make the call that morning. Say we have an 11 o'clock news conference scheduled, and it's supposed to be outdoors. Well, you better have that backup plan. And the times when you had the backup plan, it was a beautiful day. But if you'd kind of fudged the backup plan or thought, we can skate by, you know, it was a little inconvenient. And sometimes also, as an alternative, you'd have an outdoor tent. Well, outdoor tent isn't, it's not like being in a dome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The wind blows, things can get, but those were more things. One of the things you kind of think, one of the things public relations work, at least with me, it taught is, okay, what's the, even when you give advice to somebody who wants your advice on something, well, if you make this decision, here's how the public might look at it. And if you take this path, there's going to be this. Like I talked about, presidents and leaders in deans and so forth, they have to make decisions, and not everybody's going to be happy. If you're the principal of a high school, if your goal is to be the most popular guy in town or a superintendent, it's not going to happen. You're not the right person for the job, he or she. But if you do the right thing, and that's your uppermost in your mind, do the right thing. And in the case of, I think, when you're a leader of people, that you do the right thing for the most benefit, for the most common good, then you're doing well. But if you want to be, it's hard to be the most popular person when you're dealing with something like that.
Yeah, it's always you tend to think in terms of this is a good choice or a bad choice. Well, lots of times it's between two good choices or two bad choices, and either one of them has very emotional supporters on their side.
Well, you know, we all have the it's a win-win. Well, you know, and sometimes sadly it's kind of like, you hate to look at it that way, but it's kind of like a lose-lose. It's just what are you losing? What's the least harmful?
One of the things that you've been able to squeeze in your public relations years was some additional sports assignments with women's basketball, hosting the coaches show for many years, and then also sideline reporting at the Sweet 16. So let me ask you first about the women's basketball assignment and working with the coaches.
Well, again, going back to Bernie Vonderheide, I always had the support of my bosses that as long as it wasn't interfering with my day-to-day assignments in the main campus public relations office, that they knew of my love of sports. And anyway, Dave Shore had been doing the coaches show. Dave Shore of Channel 36, who's gone on to do radio work in Dallas in sports, and I think he's still he's still there. Anyway, Dave had taken a new position out of Lexington, and they needed somebody just like it was a week before the season. They needed somebody to, and so I got a call from athletics. Would you be willing to host the women's basketball coaches show? Bernadette Maddox was the coach at the time. I said, well, I'd love to, but let me check upstairs. And I got the okay. And so I went ahead and did it. And that ended up being 6 years with Bernadette and then 4 years with Mickey DeMoss while she was the head coach. And then I continued on as a sideline reporter. Christy Thomas took over the hosting roles when Matthew Mitchell became the head coach. And, of course, now we have Kyra Elzey, and they're all still involved with it. I ended up being the sideline reporter. And thanks to Gary Gupton, when we had selected telecasts, we did about five a year of women's basketball home games from Memorial Coliseum. He gave me a new moniker. Gary Gupton from Louisville, who was the play-by-play. Christy Thomas would do the color, and I was the sideline reporter. And he started calling me Courtside Carl. And so that was I didn't come up with that. That was kind of fun, though. Rather than have to worry about how to pronounce my last name or anything else, you just say, all right, let's go to Courtside Carl.
Courtside Carl, and that described the role too. You had to lean into the.
I was courtside.
Yeah, that's
I was courtside.
Exactly. The Sweet 16 assignment, that is, I think, really one of the great sports events in Kentucky, and there are broadcasters, regardless of what level of sports they're covering, they are honored to cover the Sweet 16, and you've been part of that network now for several years, again, doing those similar sorts of duties. But the years have passed. Maybe it doesn't draw capacity crowds to Rupp Arena anymore, but it's still a big, big event, and especially when a team comes from a small town and brings so many of its fans with it. What's been your experience in covering Sweet 16?
Been wonderful. And you know what? You tie those two together because women's basketball, whole reason I got involved with the KHSAA and the Sweet 16 being the sideline reporter for both the girls' Sweet 16 and the boys' Sweet 16, usually in back-to-back weeks in March in Rupp Arena now, both of them. But Dick Farmer, who's along with Tom Stevens, they're executive producers of the KHSAA Kentucky Utility Sweet 16 Radio Network. They put this together every year. Tom has been a longtime pro in media with Learfield Sports, and before that had the Kentucky Network for some time, which was once the rights holder for UK. And Dick Farmer, longtime radio and television person. Anyway, Dick Farmer was watching TV and saw me doing sideline reporting, and they had an opening for a sideline reporter coming up, and he said, well, would you want to do this for the girls and boys? Well, at that time, I looked at the schedule. I said, well, I can do the girls, but by the time the boys is around, the UK baseball season will have started. And at that time, I was in the midst of being a UK baseball PA announcer. I did that for 12 seasons before we had our first grandchild, and I elected to kind of step away from that. But I had the privilege of doing gymnastics and volleyball and other stuff, PA, and then filling in here and there for others, even a couple times men's basketball. But my point being that I've always been supported with people in UK public relations, that if I got asked to do these things, yes, if it didn't interfere with my thing. So I was able to take vacation time. Now that I'm retired, I don't have to take vacation time, but I was able to take vacation time to go and work at the Sweet 16. And my first year with the girls was 2013, and now the boys 2014. So I started doing both in that year. So it's been 9 years, I guess, 9 seasons with the girls and 8 with the boys. And if all goes well, we'll be there in a few months in Rupp Arena. Be here before you know it, because it comes around quick. And the other thing with the KHSAA, I'm fortunate enough with the PA at UK football, I get to do all the 6 class games. The state championship playoffs are now at Kroger Field in early December, so I'm looking forward to that. But you never know who's out. It's a good example. You never know who's out there watching or listening, because I didn't go and, like, audition for the sideline reporter for the Sweet 16. It just happened that Dick Farmer is watching and said, well, let's give him a call, and it all worked out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned retirement from UK. Now, we don't want to confuse anybody and have them think that you're retiring from your job as the voice of Kroger Field, because I know how much you enjoy that. But tell me about your thoughts on continuing to do that job.
Oh, well, I tell you, I'm very I'm lucky. I'm just lucky that they let me, you know, continue to do that because, you know, we both kind of semi-retired, but you're sitting here interviewing me, so obviously you
you got to stay somewhat active,
yeah,
don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's fun, and we both have enjoyed a long career in broadcasting and communications and related fields, and I love doing the PA. And as long as they feel I'm doing the job, I hope they still think I'm doing a good job and can keep at it as long as I've told my family, you let me know if you start hearing me messing up. It's live, okay? You're going to mess up, whatever it be, radio, television, live public address announcing. Nobody's going to be perfect. But you try to do a solid job, you do your preparation, you get ready, and you bring the fans your best effort. And I've told my family members that we have a couple, my wife included, that attend home games regularly. And when I start to slip, let me know, because I'd like to make the call myself that, hey, this will be my last year or whatever. I hope that's a ways down the road, but take it year to year and hopefully can keep at it a long time. And likewise, these other things. I'll tell you, you mentioned about the Sweet 16. Here's something that even though the attendance, and we did get some very good crowds this past year at some of the sessions, it might not be the 20-plus thousand at every session like it was maybe in the heyday. But try telling that to a kid that walks out on that floor, boy or girl, and gets to play where they see the Wildcats play. And you know what else? The standard high school basketball court, they used to shorten the Rupp Arena court to make it more like 84 feet, 84 by 50 instead of 94 by 50. Well, the last few years, they go the full distance, and the kids get a kick out of it. They're playing on the exact same floor that the Wildcats are, and it's a big deal. It's a big deal to them. It's a big deal to the schools and the parents. And like you said, when it gets really, really exciting is when you have Davy versus Goliath, the school with 300 kids going against the school with 2,200 kids, mm-hmm. and a 300-kid school beats them and moves on to the next round. Then it's really fun. And every once in a while, you still get a small school that might come out with the state championship. So there's always – I think it's the one thing – you're a native of Indiana who whose mom roots in Kentucky, and you end up coming to UK and spending your life mainly in Kentucky. But Indiana used to have – the all schools format, and they mm-hmm. switched. It might be fairer, yeah. air quotes, but it lost a little bit of that, what the movie Hoosiers was depicted as.
Yes, yes, it did. And, you know, you understand there are reasons behind making the switch to classes, of course, and it's not that I can't see those. Certainly you can see them, but at the same time, when I was growing up there, it was everybody in the tournament, and so everybody had a shot, and occasionally a small school would come through. But whether they did or not, what an experience for the players, coaches, and all those fans that travel to, whether it's Lexington or Louisville or Indianapolis or wherever it happens to be, it's something they'll never forget, and it's a pleasure as a broadcaster to be a part of that, I'm sure.
Oh, you just feel the enthusiasm. It comes through. And then the other thing I get to do with not only interviewing players and coaches, but usually at halftime of the radio broadcasts on the KHSAA Kentucky Utilities Sweet 16 Network, we will have sports writers, sportscasters, former UK players. One thing that really struck me, Jack Givens, 1978 hero of the national championship game victory over Duke. I had an interview with him during the Sweet 16 one year, a few years back. And I said, Jack, I said, you often still come to the Sweet 16, and, you know, you were national champion in Wildcats, but what do you remember? And he said, when Brian Station, and this is great athletes and coaches, they might have trouble recalling the wins, but they usually can, if they haven't lost much, they can remember the losses. And I was struck. It was like it hit him in the chest like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. He said, probably my most disappointing loss was as a member of Brian Station here in the Sweet 16. And I'm thinking, he went on and won a national championship with the Kentucky Wildcats. But you could see it in his eyes and hear it in his voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's very, very meaningful and carries on that way. And just an example of the magnitude of the Sweet 16, boys and girls, the event, how the event has been and meant to communities all across Kentucky all over the years. And then, of course, to those of us who have been fortunate enough to cover some tournaments as well. Well, I'm glad to know that you'll be continuing for the foreseeable future on UKPA. I do have to ask you if you occasionally get a request from someone just to say first down Kentucky in some other setting other than in the broadcast booth at the Kroger Field.
Well, if I do, if I'm introduced, I've actually had one this summer, and I couldn't be there because actually another thing I've been involved with the last several years, the Barbasol, the PGA Tour event that comes. I'm chair of the announcer committee for that, and that's been a blast. But I was committed to that this summer, and there was a wedding, and this is somebody that I knew through UK that used to work in our office and so forth. And so they contacted me. Well, could you, if you can't be there live, could you record? They wanted to do the wedding party and do the, like it was a starting lineup, you know, with the wedding party. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to say the name, but it actually was a former UK football player, and the wife was one of the bridesmaids was somebody who used to work at UK in sports and so forth, and then in our office as well. Anyway, and it was such a I said, sure, I'll do it. And, you know, and so anyway, they ended up, I didn't ask for anything, but they ended up getting me a nice little present afterwards. But it was just a thrill to do it in the style of that, and you know, kind of the first down Kentucky and the touchdown Kentucky, and get all their names. And they were able to, they were kind of, they made a video and they sent it to me on the phone, one of those things you can do with these modern devices we have. And I got to hear it. It all worked out. And it sounded like it. Thankfully, it came across. I was worried, well, is it going to sound like when you're live or not? And it was like I was off stage at a mic and doing it. And it all worked out fine. And they all came out on, and crowd there, you could tell they got a kick out of it. And I'm not saying that, I'm not talking about it to be egotistical, but yeah, I do I get a kick out of it. Hey, anytime I try to be an ambassador, even though I'm semi-retired from UK, I try to be an ambassador for UK, and also just try to be a good, whatever it is. I try to be involved with my church to the extent that I can be, and I'm pretty involved there. And other things, if people are nice enough to ask you, you want to comply, or you want to help them.
Well, I think that's a good note to wrap up on, and that's the way you've approached your career. And as we found out in this interview, it's you're maybe best known at this point as being the voice of Kroger Field, but many, many other things in your background that have established you as a great broadcaster and public relations professional as well. So I appreciate the time today. Thanks so much.
Keith, I appreciate you asking. I got to do this with Roles Reversed for a Behind the Blue that we did podcast for University of Kentucky not too long back, and had a halftime radio piece with you, and thoroughly enjoyed both of those. And you're a gentleman and a class act. And I know the one problem, and you, I'll just say it. My wife knows this if she's listening. My biggest fault is I don't know when to shut up sometimes. So I'm sorry if I went too long with some of those answers, but my heart was in the right place. Thanks.
Well, no, I appreciate all those answers. And in today's digital world, we're not going to run out of tape. So we will wrap it up here. And again, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, wuky.org.